call this meeting of the House Preventive Health Division to order. This meeting is being conducted pursuant to House Rule 10.01, allowing for electronic hearings. The first item on the agenda is the roll call. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Freiberg.
Present.
Freiberg, present. Vice Chair Bierman. Vice Chair Bierman. Representative Grunhagen.
Present.
Grunhagen, present. Representative Acum.
Present.
Acum, present. Representative Abaje.
Present.
Abaje, present. Representative Ackland.
Present.
Ackland, present. Representative Carlson.
Carlson's present.
Carlson, present. Representative Franzen. Representative Franzen. Representative Heintzman.
Present.
Heintzman, present. Representative Morrison.
Morrison, present.
Morrison, present. Representative Pryor. Representative Pryor. Vice Chair Bierman.
Present.
Bierman, present. Representative Franzen.
Franzen, present.
Franzen, present. Representative Pryor. Chair, you have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Gelman. Good eye catching the members joining there. So we do have a quorum. So the next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes of the February 9th meeting of our division. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
I move to approve the minutes, please, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bierman. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Okay, seeing none, please unmute yourself. Representative Bierman moves approval of the minutes for February 9th, 2022. Those in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for February 9th, 2022 are proposed. The first item on the agenda, we have two bills plus a presentation from the Subcommittee on Water Policy. The director, Mr. Jim Stark, is here. So before we get to the bills, since they are on the same topic, we will have a brief presentation from Jim Stark. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Stark. Please identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Chair Freiberg, committee members, thank you for the opportunity. My name is Jim Stark. I'm the director of the Legislative Subcommittee on Water Policy. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss House File 3003 and 3006 with you today. Many of you probably have not had a lot of contact with the Subcommittee on Water Policy, so allow me, if I could, to just give you a very short introduction. Because water is important, complex, controversial, and costly, the development of water policy needs to be undertaken thoughtfully. The subcommittee reviews water policy issues that affect Minnesota and proposes legislation. During the interim, the subcommittee held hearings to explore water issues that were important to the state, brought to us by stakeholders and members of the legislature. The committee's recommendations have been developed based on discussions among committee members, stakeholders, and state agency personnel. Today, we'll discuss two of those bills. Next, please, Simon. So the Subcommittee on Water Policy is bicameral, bipartisan in nature, and consists of 12 members. Next, please. These are the members from the House and the Senate. The co-chairs are Senator Chris Eaton and Representative John Poston. Next, please. What are the statutory powers and duties? The subcommittee reviews water reports and information. It informs members about water issues and policies. It makes recommendations to the legislature. It prepares water-related bills and shares information with groups like the LCCMR, the Clean Water Council, and the Lasard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Fund and standing legislative committees. Next, please. So during the interim, the subcommittee considered 50 legislative recommendations from stakeholders and some committee members and members of the legislatures. We held stakeholder meetings to to listen to comments and suggestions from that 50. The subcommittee prioritized 13 topics. They reached consensus on moving forward with those 13 topics, and bills were drafted and are being introduced. Next, please. These are the 13 bills. Today we will hear two of them. First, House File 3003, which ensures drinking water free from lead. This bill includes an environmental justice issue. It would help ensure that everyone has drinking water free from lead, because no amount of lead is safe in drinking water. It addresses some drinking water facilities that are not currently being included in testing. As a start, the bill would provide for testing of drinking water from childcare facilities, some private wells, rental properties that are now provided. The inclusion of the private wells fits into the scope of House File 3006. 3006 provides support for voluntary water testing of private wells. Private wells supply 1.2 million Minnesotans with their drinking water. There are no state requirements for water safety testing of those private wells. Water safety for private wells is called out as a priority in a recent report to the legislature by the Minnesota Department of Health and the university. This bill would provide minimal funding to assist nonprofit organizations and the university who are volunteers to conduct local water safety testing clinics. Mr. Chair, thank you.
Thank you for your presentation, Mr. Stark. I see Representative Grunhagen has his hand raised. Representative Grunhagen, did you have a question for Mr. Stark?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, so these bills came out of the water subcommittee, which I used to serve on, and you did an excellent job leading, if I remember right, Jim. So thanks for your efforts. And obviously, we want everyone to have clean water. My question is, when I look at these two bills, I see the funding comes out of the general fund. Why was that recommended versus LCCR or the legacy fund, which has about $1 billion and does address water issues? Why did you choose the general fund versus the those two funds? If you'd like to read. I have one more question.
Sure. This might also be a good question for Representative Akam when we get to the bills themselves. But Mr. Stark, if you have any response to that, please proceed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Grunhagen, thank you for that comment. And we miss you on the subcommittee. The general fund, I think these programs are appropriate because they would be considered longer term programs if they are approved and passed. So they would go on in continuation, as opposed to, you know, programs from the LCCMR, which tend to be project specific. So these are not project specific programs in and of themselves. So I hope that helps, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you for that response, Jim. I'll probably ask Representative Akam too what her thoughts are on that. But the other question is, in 1983, I built a new house out in the country on my dad's farm. And one of the requirements I had to do, because they drilled a well, was to take the water into the local county and have it tested. That was a requirement that the person who took care of the well made me aware of. So is that a local ordinance, or how does that play out? Do you know at all?
Mr. Stark.
And Mr. Chair, Representative, thanks for that question. It's a good one. And there is some minimal testing required by the Department of Health when a well is installed. So when the well driller completes the well, they take a sample that is sent in for nitrates, for bacteria, in some cases for arsenic. And that's a great program, but that does not continue on. As we all know, the quality of your well changes over time. So beyond that first initial sampling, there is no requirement for a homeowner to sample their wells.
Representative Grunhagen.
Okay, that basically I'll ask Representative Akam some additional questions in that area when the time comes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your presentation, Mr. Stark. And I know our focus today is lead, but I'm just wondering, since we are talking a little bit about the water subcommittee, if the committee is approaching, when you're looking at the state's water policy, if you're approaching some of our agricultural policies and the possibility of embarking on copper sulfide mining in Minnesota, both of which obviously have significant impacts on our water.
Mr. Stark.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. The committee is looking at a number of things, and you'll hear in House File 3006 that this bill is about more than lead. It's about other nitrates and other contaminants and chemicals that might be in wells. The mining issue is a very important one, and we have not discussed that in detail at this point. Thank you.
Representative Morrison, follow up?
No, thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Stark. In case any questions come up during the discussion of the two bills, are you able to stick around as well?
Mr. Chair, I'll be here.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. So with that, I think we will move to the two bills. The first bill on the agenda is House File 3003. Representative Akam, would you like to move that your bill be re-referred to the Health Policy and Finance Committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is my motion.
Okay, thank you. Representative Akam has moved the bill. Please describe your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, there is no safe level of lead exposure that's been found, and preventing exposure at any level is considered the best protective measure. While anyone may face health impacts when exposed to lead at elevated levels, children are the most vulnerable due to their developing brains and behaviors. For infants and children, exposure to lead can cause significant damage to their brain, nervous system, red blood cells, and kidneys. Minnesota requires that schools test every 5 years, but there is no requirement for water testing at childcare centers. The Minnesota Department of Health has an EPA grant that funds and allows for testing in childcare centers, but not including remediations. Since childcare facilities are usually private businesses, they may be reluctant to test without some funding to help address the lead problems they might find. Grants for remediation of lead sources in schools and daycares would help fix this issue. House File 3006. My apologies, Mr. Chair. Okay, so this is a message to everybody. Don't drop your bills together in a group so they all get close in numbers. So
that's not advice I always follow myself, so it's important for us to keep in mind, though.
So given that, should I stick with 3006 or should we switch to the other bill? My apologies, Mr. Chair, and I'll take your direction.
Whichever you prefer, I guess we can switch if you would like to. So I guess I will just say then Representative Akam, just to formalize it, withdraws her motion that House File, actually, on second thought, maybe since we've already made the motion, maybe you should just describe House File 3003, and we should go in that order. Now that I'm sorry for thinking out loud here, but certainly the background information on lead is relevant to House File 3003 as well.
Well, and so 3003 is testing for lead, and so now that I look at myself and I get my bill that is printed in front of me and my notes, I think I was on the right page. I think I just panicked for a moment.
Yeah. So. I was looking at it. It sounded relevant, but I was trusting. Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, okay. I think it's continue with 3003.
Thank you. We'll just pretend that this little, interruption didn't happen.
Sure.
So, let's see, let's back up to Minnesota requires that schools test every 5 years, but there's no requirement for childcare centers. MDH has an EPA grant that allows for testing, but not remediation. And since childcare facilities are usually private businesses, they may be reluctant to test without some funding to help address the problems that they might find. Grants for remediation of lead sources in schools and daycares would help to fix this issue. House File 3003 has two parts, The first is it will provide funding to MDH to test for lead in private wells, daycare facilities, and rental properties, and to remediate where found. And the second part of the bill is to provide funding to improve the lead service line inventory so that information is available for people when so that when they can make informed decisions when they're purchasing or renting homes. This report, a report that I was reading estimates the cost for removing the two most significant sources of lead in service lines and in interior plumbing to cost between $1.5 billion and $4.1 billion. The Federal Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act provides over $43 million to Minnesota homeowners to help get lead out of their drinking water. So there's money that will be able to help, but it's not going to solve this problem completely. While lead is not often found in groundwater or surface water, the chemical composition of water can influence whether lead leaches from plumbing into drinking water. For example, water from low pH levels will more likely leach lead into the plumbing. The two most significant sources of lead in drinking water are service lines, as I said, and which are controlled by cities, and plumbing fixtures, which are generally controlled by property owners. And with that, I wanted to, there's a couple of people that will be speaking on the bill. Jeff Brober with the Minnesota Well Owners Organization, and I believe that a representative from the Department of Health is here as well.
Thank you, Representative Akam. Representative Heintzman, I see your hand. I think with your indulgence, we will take testimony first, and then you will be first in line for member questions.
Mr. Chair, is there an amendment to this bill?
No, there is an amendment to the next bill. It has not, that one is 3006. That amendment has not met deadline, so we plan on discussing the amendment, but it will not be offered.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the confusion as to which bill we were discussing, I just wanted to confirm one way or the other. Thank you.
You're welcome.
My apologies for confusing everybody.
No problem. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Broberg. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you, Representative Akam, for offering the bill. My name is Jeff Broberg. I'm a licensed professional geologist, one of the directors of the Minnesota Well Owners Organization. We'll talk a little more about our program under the next bill. But what I wanted to convey to you is since May of last year, we've held testing clinics that have had over 1,000 households come to our clinics and offer to get free water testing. The question about lead is probably the most frequent question we get. We don't test for that. There's not a desktop screening. We advise people to get water tests from a certified lab. And we have some pamphlets that we can give away about the risks of lead. But it is a primary concern for everybody, no matter what their water supply is. And it comes at a confluence with some difficult issues that oftentimes with private wells, it's your plumbing, it's your appliances, it's something you own, and people are concerned about what's it going to cost. That becomes a barrier to knowledge sometimes, is the fear of those things. So the first thing this bill does is provide the testing for that small group of people, that the schools and daycares and areas like that. And reporting that, first of all, testing is the foundation of good water stewardship. It also will motivate the people, we think, to take on their own testing, to take their own home water and to see if it has lead, and especially if there's a means out there with the federal money that Representative Akam talked about and other opportunities to remove any lead if it's present. We honestly don't know what the range of impact is among private well owners. But I'll be honest, years ago, I used lead solder in the plumbing in some of my outdoor facilities. I shouldn't drink the water outside in my house. There's real issues that people need to address, and we hear too often about the Chinese appliances, faucets, water-using appliances that still have lead in them. So, you know, we don't ever want to expose families and kids to this. The testing proposed here and the actions proposed for the remediation of that is a really important public service. So I'll leave it at that, Mr. Chair, and be available for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Broberg. The second testifier is Tani Eschenauer from the Department of Health. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to talk about our state efforts to protect our drinking water from lead. For the record, my name is Tani Eschenauer, and I'm the manager of the Water Policy Center at the Minnesota Department of Health. It's housed within the Environmental Health Division. As the representative so clearly articulated, there is no safe level of lead in drinking water. In 2019, we authored a report with the University of Minnesota, which identified lead service lines as the primary intervention to address lead exposures through drinking water, but also identified was premise plumbing as another 50% of the contribution, meaning lead solder in homes or fixtures which are inside the building. We also found in that report that there's a minimum return on investment of $2 in increased earning and productivity benefiting Minnesota, and that's for every dollar of cost invested in replacement. Next slide, please. So I want to talk a little bit about the different buckets of funding we have to address lead, both in lead service lines on city water supply systems, as well as later on in child cares and schools. So first, lead service line replacement funding. I know there was a number of questions about this in an earlier hearing of this committee. So we currently have funding available to replace lead service lines through our state Drinking Water Revolving Fund. These are dollars that come to us through the US EPA. And we also have the new funding through a federal grant that I'll talk about on the next slide, which adds to those dollars that are available. Currently, we can fund the privately owned portion of the lead service line replacement up to 50%. But we know from a public health perspective that we would never want to replace just the privately owned half of the lead service line, but the entire line needs to be replaced when that happens. Otherwise, you have the potential to release a lot more lead into the drinking water. The remaining balance of funding that lead service line replacement can come from a drinking water revolving fund loan, but it's not required. And those loans are very reasonable. The interest rate is about 1% over 20 years. So the city water system would apply to the revolving fund for a grant loan combination, and then they pass those dollars on to their customers. The way in which they do that is up to the system. And we like having the cities making those decisions because they know their own situation the best, and they can control who does the lead service line replacement. Next slide, please. So we do have these dollars now available to us through the Federal Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, and those dollars will come to us through the existing Drinking Water Revolving Fund that's administered by the Public Facilities Authority, but they do that in collaboration with our drinking water program at the Department of Health. When those dollars are available, we want to be able to make them available to fund replacing both the private side, as is currently true, as well as the public side. And we have proposed a legislative change which would make that possible. As you can see on the slide, that it's proposed to be $43 million a year for 5 years, a total of $215 million. In our report to the legislature in 2019, we had estimated the dollars that would be required for replacing the estimated 100,000 lead service lines. But we think now, because of some inflation that has really increased since COVID, that the total amount required might be closer to $500 million. This slide talks about how these funds are dispersed, the balance between what is as a loan and what is as a grant. We think there might be some changes in that before we get all the guidelines from EPA. It comes through the revolving fund, as I mentioned. And I also mentioned how we would like to be able to have that cover the replacement of the entire lead service line and not just the private portion. Next slide, please. It's really important that homeowners and renters in Minnesota can look to one place to be able to see whether or not the water service line coming into their dwelling is made from lead or not. And so we have already been working with the university and the state auditor's office to make available an infrastructure stress mapping tool. It's a transparency tool where you can go online and you can look at the age and the number of miles of your sewer lines in your town, your drinking water infrastructure. And we would propose to add to that a tool where you could go look up your address to see whether or not you have a lead service line and whether or not that's been replaced. And doing these inventories is really the first important step in moving towards replacing all the lead service lines. And it also will help us to track the replacement over the next decade or so. Next slide, please. Then moving on to lead in schools and daycare, as was mentioned, we do have a statute that requires testing for lead in schools and charter public schools and charter schools every 5 years. It doesn't require action at a specific level of lead in it, but it strongly encourages schools to take action at every level where lead is found. They have to make these results available to parents, to the public, so they can know what's happening in the schools where their children attend. They are not required to provide those results to MDH. We often get inquiries about this, but we just refer them back to the school that they're concerned about. They do have some funds available through a long-term facilities maintenance plan, but the applications for that maintenance plan are many and are many more than just lead concerns. Next slide, please. So looking at the available funding sources for both schools and child cares, I mentioned the long-term facilities maintenance plan. And through MDH, we have an EPA Water Infrastructure for the Nation grant, which allows us to fund testing and laboratory analysis for samples for public schools and licensed child cares. It does not provide any dollars to address lead when it is found in the schools. And so we think that, and talking with childcare stakeholders, that they are reluctant to test because they don't have dollars to address lead if it is found. We also have proposed through the governor's budget a lead remediation in schools and childcare settings grant program. This would provide those dollars. We know from social science research that often people are reluctant to take to find out what levels of contaminants are in their drinking water if they don't think that there's something to be done about it. So the total request for that is about $5 million. Next slide, please. And then potential gaps in funding, which still exist in the area of private wells that might be serving homes and child cares, as Mr. Stark mentioned. Lead is not commonly used in connecting the well to the home, but as same as in homes that are on city water supplies, there can be lead in solder or in plumbing fixtures. And we do suggest that well owners voluntarily test their water at the tap for lead, but that initiative has to be taken by the homeowner themselves. It's not a requirement of the health department. And then there's some concern with rental properties. Those that are on public water systems or city water systems, they will have their lead service lines replaced through the state revolving fund over the next decade or so. But the challenge is for renters who may not know whether or not there is lead in their water. When a system tests at a home and finds lead, within 24 hours, they talk with the owner of that building. But we don't have any idea of how often that is communicated to the people that are actually living in the rental facility. Next slide, please. So I'll just close with our vision that drinking water is safe for everyone, everywhere, and thank you for your time during this hearing today. And I'll be glad to answer questions as the chair directs.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Eschenauer. That concludes the people who have signed up to testify on this bill, so we will turn to member discussion. Representative Grunhagen, you are first on the list.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the presentations. My question is for Representative Akam. Right now, and this is probably a little bit outside the purview of the committee because it's not finance, but there's no fiscal note. What are you thinking in terms of general fund expenditure, or are you going to have that more firmed up by the next committee?
Yeah, thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Yeah, you're correct. It is a little bit outside of our jurisdiction since we are a policy committee, but I'll allow a little latitude. Just if you have thoughts on that, Representative Akam, please comment.
Thank you so much for the question, Representative Grunhagen. I do think that's a really important point. And as I mean, there's a lot with this whole lead and the federal infrastructure bill that has been changing. And so we didn't really pinpoint a dollar amount. I think that will be coming in as it makes its next step in the Finance Committee.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Akam. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, the other question is, it seems like the bill is primarily targeting children. Is that correct?
Representative Akam.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Certainly prioritizing youth, given the impacts that it has on young people.
Representative Grunhagen.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Akam.
Thank you. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If Tiani is still available, I did have a couple of clarifying questions, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Sure, Ms. Eschenauer. Yes, proceed, Representative Heintzman.
Okay, thank you. In your presentation, I saw federal money available for testing, water testing, and a pretty significant sum, if I recall. Is this bill, maybe I should phrase this another way, Mr. Chair. Is there already available dollars for testing in the areas covered in the language of this bill? So I'm trying to get at, do we need an additional general fund expense if we already have that available, which maybe Tani couldn't speak to, but if there is existing language already funding this or existing dollars available already, I just want to confirm that.
Ms. Eschenauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Heintzman. The dollars that we currently have available are through a time-limited U.S. EPA grant to the Minnesota Department of Health, and we expect that will cover a limited number of schools. There are about 8,000 childcare facilities in the state of Minnesota, and about, 2,500 educational buildings that are a part of schools. So as you can see, the universe for testing is quite large.
Thank you, Ms. Eschenauer. Representative Heintzman.
Was that a yes or a no? Is there dollars available or not?
Yes, sir.
Ms. Eschenauer. I guess just to clarify, you said, Ms. Eschenauer, you said the funding was available for schools. I know the bill also speaks to private wells and rental properties. Does the federal money cover those types of properties, Ms. Eschenauer?
No, the federal wind grant dollars are only available for public schools and charter schools.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Eschenauer. Representative Heintzman.
Are there any other funding mechanisms currently in place that would cover the cost for schools and daycares?
Ms. Eschenauer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heintzman, not that I'm aware of.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's primarily what I was trying to get at, and it sounds like it may not be available. I will be doing some more research on that to confirm, because I am also aware of private money, which that might not be in your purview, that may be available. So I want to make sure that we're not being redundant. I had previously co-authored this bill, and the question of the funding mechanisms is something that I want to have squared away, so I'm better clear on what we're doing. As the members of this committee probably already know, In Minnesota, we have a Clean Water Council, which we already have talked about in an earlier presentation where I serve, and Tanny, you're there as well. There are a lot of priority. A lot of priority is placed on water in Minnesota, probably more so than any other state in the country. So it's not necessarily wrong to be moving in this direction to make sure that water testing is available. And Representative Akam, I want to commend you because you sent me an email asking me if I had any questions on this bill. And in yesterday's committee, I had received a similar email from Representative Jordan, and she never responded. You responded, and I appreciate that. Oh, I thank you for that. And we're able to kind of go through some of those things prior to even the committee starting. And I'll watch as this comes through the process, Representative Akam. Thank you for working on this issue. I think it's very important.
Thank you, Representative Heintzman. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Akam, for bringing forward the bills that are under consideration today. And I don't think that the path is going to include the Early Childhood Committee, so I appreciate that I'm hearing it now. But I could, you know, maybe we could hear it there too. And I just to reinforce what we've heard in previous testimony is on the developing brain. Lead does irreversible damage. So as we heard medical testimony before, that you can't fix it, and that the mother of a middle-aged son at this point in Duluth, who still struggles with the poisoning that happened to him early in life, we can't fix that as a state. So we know that prevention is our only option, is to prevent this these kinds of poisoning of people, and most importantly, poisoning of our youngest Minnesotans with their developing brain. So this section of it that adds child care centers to it, I think is just really we need to lift up as saying this is going to be one of our front lines for prevention, but that knowing every family needs to be able to trust their water supply. Otherwise, we are Flint, Michigan, and that has a cost down the road that just keeps multiplying. A good discussion about fiscal impacts of this, but then also remembering the fiscal impact of not taking preventive measures is so important to add to the discussion. And I know that as we take the oath of office every time, to know that there are core functions that government is responsible for. And I think just to reiterate what I've heard from both sides of the aisle, this is a bipartisan issue of having clean water. Just commend Representative Akam for your work in this area, for our testifiers today. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for keeping attention on clean water and the preventive health importance of getting lead out of our water. So thanks all.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. That concludes. I do not have any other members on the list to ask questions. So Representative Akam, do you have any concluding remarks on House File 3003?
Thank you for making sure I'm staying on the right bill. My apologies again to everybody for the confusion. And I appreciate the conversation. I appreciate the questions. I hope to work to coming up with some solutions that will gain support for the bill. I do think it's important that it came out of a bipartisan and bicameral group. And to Representative Pryor's point, this really isn't a partisan issue. And so I hope that we can all support this bill going forward. And with that, Mr. Chair, I renew my motion to move House File 3003 be recommended to be referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Thank you, Representative Akam. Representative Akam renews her motion. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Freiberg.
Yes.
Freiberg, aye. Vice Chair Bierman.
Aye.
Bierman, aye. Representative Grunhagen.
Aye.
Grunhagen, aye. Representative Akam.
Aye.
Akam, aye. Representative Abaje.
Aye.
Abaje, aye. Representative Ackland.
Aye.
Ackland, aye. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Franzen. Representative Franzen. Representative Heintzman.
Aye.
Heintzman, aye. Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Representative Pryor.
Pryor, aye.
Pryor, aye.
Thought I saw Representative
Franzen, yes. Sorry, I was with the constituent. Yes.
Thank you, Representative. Chair, you have 11 ayes and no nays.
Okay. There being 11 ayes and zero nays, the motion prevails, and House File 3003 is recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. So thank you, Representative Akam. Your bill is on its way. Next is House File 3006. Representative Akam, would you like to move House File 3006?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to recommend House File or move that House File 3006 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Akam. And just so members are aware, this was alluded to before, there is an amendment to this bill that we received. However, we received it after the deadline. So I think just to be consistent with our rules, we should probably not adopt that amendment. It is likely to be adopted in the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. So I thought I'd just post it, have it posted on the committee page for members' interest. So you're welcome to ask questions about that as well. But we will not be voting on it today. So Representative Akam, would you like to describe House File 3006?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So House File 3006 is a voluntary private well water testing program. And just to quickly touch on the amendment was intended to change where the appropriation is going. So have it flow through the Department of Health to the University of Minnesota and have it then administered by the extension program. We eliminated the language on line 8 that it says interested nonprofit organizations. It only confused the bill, and the nonprofits can participate given current language. And then also it wanted to ensure that there was enough time to get the pilot program kind of up and going and make sure that it's they have enough time to complete something. We extended the end date to June 30th of 2024. And so those are the changes, and happy to take questions about any of that. But private drinking water wells supply 750,000 Minnesotans with water, and the safety of that water from those wells is currently unregulated, and attention is needed to ensure water safety. House File 3006 will appropriate funds to flow through, as I said, MDH, to the University of Minnesota Water Resources Center, and that's part of the extension program. And they will organize clinics regionally throughout the state to make it easy and convenient for well owners to bring samples to be tested for things. Mr. Broberg earlier kind of alluded to this, but tested for arsenic and bacteria and nitrates. With that, we do have a few speakers that are here today to speak to the bill, Mr. Broberg being one of them.
I think I see Representative Grunhage's hand, but I think we'll go to testimony first, and then I'll go to members' questions if that.
Mr. Chair.
Sure. Thank you. So, Mr. Broberg, welcome back. Please, even though we've already heard from you, please re-identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Maybe Mr. Brown can put up I have a few slides that I'd like to go through quickly, but as introductory remarks, again, I'm Jeff Broberg, a licensed professional geologist with the Minnesota Well Owners Organization. And I want to tell you that I'm really happy to start here at Preventive Health. And the reason is that I've learned something in the last 2 years working with this as a geologist. And it's the geologists aren't that good at communicating risks to private well owners. We started working through an RSDP grant with the School of Public Health, and it has opened our eyes to how public health people have a better way of communicating with people about risk and actionable items. And it's something that was missing. For years, I'd start off my presentations in groups with a geologic map. But that doesn't resonate with people. What matters is the quality of water at your kitchen sink. And what do you do with the knowledge you have from the well testing that goes forward? So we started our well testing clinics in 2018, literally just before COVID. And we were having small clinics, 30 to 50 people that would come out from rural areas. And we were doing the classic geologic stuff, a lot of geologic mapping and the nitrate analysis that was really coming from the equipment we borrowed from the Department of Health. But in last year, when COVID hit, we decided we have to take a different approach. We're not going to have in-person meetings. We need to do something else. So we started working with a variety of partners, and most significantly, the Minnesota Groundwater Association. And we impaneled a group of 30 professionals to address 7 different subjects related to testing. This is something akin to a planning grant that you would get through an LCCMR or something. And we had 500 years of experience among people who helped advise on volunteer recruitment, what do well owners need, what do people hosting clinics need, what should we test for, how do we measure the success. And just 2 weeks ago, published our final report, an 80-page report that talks about all of these items to help us revise this. It gave us so many clues. Let's have the next slide about how to put these clinics on. And it was related principally to our partners. And you know these issues before. You can go to the next slide. These are what we're worried about. It's a quarter of the state. And how do we make it safer for people? And we learned a couple things. First of all, there's barriers that people have. There's a fear of a regulatory hammer out there somewhere. That's not what we do. We aren't regulatory. We want people to take the information at their kitchen sink and be actionable for it. Fortunately, we're finding 80% of people have good water. We work hard to make them grateful for that water and to think about how best to protect it for their own household and for future generations. But those that have tainted water, we're working to get treatment solutions for them. And we don't just drop them off in the wilderness and say, you have bad water tests. We have a series of a large cohort of professionals that are willing to work with them and advise them on how that should be done. Next slide. We've been putting on the well clinics. The first one after COVID, we couldn't have inside, so we decided to do a drive-through clinic. And we worked with, we had 14 different partners on this project, SWCDs, public health, the We Are Water campaign, City of Rochester, advertised that we got great TV coverage. And the day of the event in May of 2020, we had almost 340 people show up in 4 hours. The police came and said, you're at threat of blocking the traffic on the north side of Rochester. There was a huge enthusiasm for this, and people came because it was free. It could be anonymous. We had people that didn't feel comfortable sharing their well location or anything about it. That's fine with us. This is information for them. It's voluntary. We're not reporting this to people. This is for their own information, and ask them if they'd like a follow-up from us if they have tainted water. Well, all of these, I mean, the guy in the yellow triangle there, he said he walked 11 miles that day, going back and forth to the cars to collect the samples. We just had a terrific effort, and you know what? All of these volunteers want to do it again. And we're finding a great enthusiasm for this in these clinics. So let's have the next slide. We're looking, really started off with an estimated cost for a 2-year pilot that would fund just the efforts of the university extension for safe drinking water testing and the nonprofits. We want to include the Department of Health. They're important partners, clearly, of this. And we found that the funding mechanism is a little easier if it's a pass through to Department of Health to the U of M. We're not fiddling with the U of M budget, and we're not having an impact on the Department of Health budget that isn't unfunded. But significantly, out of that money, almost two-thirds of it goes back to the well owners. It's a direct benefit to the people we want to serve, the people we want to be testing their wells and having the options for this. The other thing we've learned in our clinics, and like I said, we've had 1,000 people in the last 10 months, is we can't do this alone as a small nonprofit. When we host a clinic in St. Joseph's and have 400 people, we'd love to be able to do that every other week, but as nonprofit volunteers, we can't. And as we looked around the state, we think the partnership between health and the Water Resource Center is the best vehicle for doing that. It builds on the Water Resource Center's work on septics. It's similar to things like the Master Gardeners Program, where they're recruiting volunteers and training people throughout their community. And we think that that would be the best vehicle. So the next slide, I think that's it perhaps, isn't it? Yeah. So just to wrap it up, these have been priorities identified by the water subcommittee. They've been known issues for a long time. Private well owners don't have the benefit of public water supplies. They get their water tested, and they have a mechanism to deal with things. Aside from the well code, which is the only real benefit that well owners have, is that it requires you drill a standard well that's protected, and you test it before you complete it so you know you have safe water. Well, there's little benefit out there from people that own private wells, and it puts them in a place where they're a little scared about it. They don't know what to do. They want advice. And the thing that we've learned, probably most important, is when we take this approach, people like to talk about their water. At these clinics, we have water professionals that sit down with them, and we hear the stories. And it is amazing how people like their water. They you know, and no matter kind of what they're really disappointed if the numbers come back bad because they like their water. What are they going to do? Are they going to still like their water? But the fact is that we're finding 80% of the people have good water. We want them to be thankful for that and to move forward with the stewardship that keeps it that way. But for those that don't, testing is the foundation of action. And that's what we're asking for, and we think we can accomplish with this. So I'll leave my comments there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Broberg. The second testifier that we have is Matt Spellman from the Minnesota Realtors. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Matt Spellman, and I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. Thank you for the opportunity to testify quick here today. Our association is a statewide business trade association with a membership of over 21,000 real estate professionals working with buyers and sellers of all types of property throughout Minnesota. I'm here to express our support for House File 3006. I'm going to be quick by first thanking Representative Akam for bringing this bill forward. I also want to thank Jim Stark and the members of the Subcommittee on Minnesota Water Policy for hosting stakeholder engagement meetings leading up to session and for their willingness to consider our input. Our association believes expanding access to volunteer testing for private well owners statewide will both increase the frequency of testing as well as help educate property owners on well safety best practices. This was highlighted by Mr. Broberg's experience that he was speaking about just a couple minutes ago. And we look forward to working with other stakeholders on how to raise awareness and promote this program if this bill is, in fact, enacted. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm happy to stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Spellman. That concludes the list of people who have signed up to testify. I understand we do have some people here from the University of Minnesota Water Resources, as well as MDH, available to answer questions should they come up. We'll turn to member questions. Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Freiberg. Thanks to the testifiers. And I just got a couple clarifying questions and then one for Representative Akam. You know, it's a voluntary program. One of my concerns is what's voluntary today in the state is mandated tomorrow. Let's all remember that and keep it voluntary if at all possible. But I have a question for Mr. Broberg. So these clinics that have been conducted already, have they been all volunteer or has there been some private funding or, you know, what has been the source of any funding for the, or has it been completely volunteer as far as the people who have participated on this?
Mr. Broberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. It has been a volunteer effort. We've got some small grants from University of Minnesota RSDP and Institute of Environment that pay for some of our printing. In very small amounts. Nobody's getting compensated at MNMU or MGWA. We're recruiting volunteers, principally a lot of retirees who are happy to help us, and they're doing this all on their own dime. So it's a big network of cooperators. We loan the equipment from the Minnesota Department of Ag. We've had township halls offer the space or different places. So we're trying to fit all of these community relations together as part of this, and it's been real successful. So just an example, in Stearns County, 10 townships sent out postcards to all of their citizens, 8,500 postcards advertising the clinic. Huge benefit. I mean, that was just a cooperator thing that we asked, they delivered, and have a big public impact for the people that need to know this information. So it is complex, but this is where we think nonprofits excel at putting these things together. And this is why we think a cooperative effort between the nonprofits and the university and health really makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Broberg. Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for that response, Mr. Broberg. Now, you alluded to it. So out of the $750,000, about 800,000. Mm-hmm. What percent was going to be used that wouldn't go directly to the benefit of the well owners or administrative costs?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Broberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The way that we've done that calculation so far, and it does not have the complete assessment through the Department of Health or a fiscal note yet, but we backed that up as what is the benefit to the well owners in getting the screening and then offering them discounts or grants to do lab testing from certified labs so that they get assurance of this. So by our estimate, about two-thirds of that money is direct benefit to the well owners who participate in our clinics. Our organization doesn't need administrative money to do this. We're a nonprofit that are funded through other sources. But, you know, clearly health has some administrative things. And Joel Larson is here from the University of Minnesota. They'd have a program manager and people facilitating that. And we think that's how a good voluntary partnership that hopefully doesn't become the regulatory thing that you worry about comes to being. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Grunhagen?
Oh, one more quick question for Representative Akam. You know, since this is a pilot program and a one-time cost, it looks like, why aren't we going through the LCCR or legacy fund for that cost and pilot program versus the last bill was ongoing? So I'd just like her to respond to that and if she would be willing to look into that versus going out of the general funds.
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Grunhagen, for the question. I think that while it is a pilot, I do think there's hope and potential that maybe it could be a program that would make sense to continue on. I'm certainly willing to look into other funding options as well, but I think that's why we chose this path.
Representative Grunhagen? All
right. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, this is Jeff Broberg. If I could,
yeah, Mr. Broberg.
If you don't mind if I address that to we see it as starting off as a pilot and the goal of, you know, contacting 10% of the households in the state in the first year with this sort of program. But it's a big state. It's a lot of effort. And we think if we can demonstrate the success with all of the planning that we've done so far, that under the next cycle, it becomes part of the university's budget, right? That this is part of the service that they provide. And we think there are other sources of funding, but we don't want this to be just I served on the LCCMR for 10 years. We don't want this to be a two-year one and done sort of thing. There's an ongoing need for this. So let's get it started and move on to the next cycle to make these sorts of things permanent once we've refined this effort and made sure we're delivering it with measurable outcomes.
Thank you, Mr. Broberg. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Akam, for bringing the bill forward, and really appreciate the information from Mr. Broberg today on these issues. Representative Grunhagen asked my first question, which was in regards to the money going back to the well owners. So thank you for that clarity on that. I just wanted to follow up on the, and first applaud you for the community engagement you're creating with this grassroots organizing around testing for people. I think there would be a huge interest in that everywhere. As was stated earlier, Minnesotans care about their water, and it is going to be continual into the future. So I appreciate that longer-term view. But I do have a question, Mr. Broberg. I want to go back to your testing in Rochester. I believe you said there were about 340 people that had their water tested. And earlier I heard 80% of Minnesotans have, satisfactory or good water. That still leaves 20% that don't. And so my question is, was that about the findings in Rochester, if you have a recollection of what those numbers were? And then secondly, when people fall below that 80%, is it categorized by need of a repair, so to speak?
Mr. Broberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. These are questions we look at all the time. And what we found is the 80% number comes from our testing clinics at the largest clinics we've had in Rochester and in Stearns County. We held three clinics on the White Earth Reservation. It was 95% of them had good water there. Really good outcome, right? So it does vary across the state, but the I think the key part of this is we want to have a universal message across the state: test your water, and we'll help you find the solutions to that if you don't have good water. We have people that have the capacity to do that, but we need that foundation step of the testing. And just to tell you a story, one of our partners up on the White Earth Reservation has got the funding to buy their own testing equipment. And in March, they're going to start rolling out to do their own local testing with the knowledge that we've transferred to them. I can't think of a better outcome for our organization to motivate a local group to say, yeah, we want to do this ourselves, and get involved in the citizen science and the care for the water. So there's a lot of options and opportunity here just to expand that through knowledge and the knowledge kind of rules, and making it easy for people, reducing those barriers is so important. I hope that answers the question.
Sure.
No, thank you. Mr. Chair, thank you. I don't have any further questions. I just want to, again, applaud Mr. Broberg for his work and Rep. Akam for the bill today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bierman. Representative Ackland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, too, for all the testifiers and for the work that you're doing. I think Representative Bierman was touching on the question that I had, and part of this for me is just understanding the testing of the lead in water. So I felt like I heard Tani Eschenauer say that there's no specific action at certain levels. So my question is, is lead identified as just yes or no, or is it identified as low, high, critical? And when we get to a certain level, maybe it's at a low level, maybe the remediation, at least a quick fix, might be a water purifier at the sink, you know, for drinking. If it's at a higher level, a critical value, maybe more immediate attention would be need to be done. I'm just curious if it's quantified at all. And part of my reason, well, I'll just stop with that and see if anybody's able to answer that question first.
Mr. Broberg looks like he might be able to answer. Mr. Chair, I do also see Ms. Eschenauer here.
I'd be happy to take a shot at it. Like I said, it's one of the most frequently asked questions at our clinics. Are you testing for lead? We advise you need a certified laboratory test. Costs about $35 to test for lead, and that's important. But our view is different than the health risk limit that has a numerical limit. No lead is good in your water, and especially if you have kids or going to have kids. That is just, and this is where sometimes our view as a nonprofit is a little more protective of the water than the state standards even. That we say you need treatment, you know, and you're right. There are some effective pitcher type treatments and a variety of things that fortunately we just had a University of Minnesota graduate student work for us for a semester to come up with all the treatment methods. So we're working through that, but I think Tanny perhaps has some insight into that too. So.
Sure, Ms. Eschenauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. So just to be clear, I think maybe I wasn't as clear in my presentation. In the model plan that we have for schools, we don't have any kind of threshold level at which they have to take specific actions, meaning we don't let the schools off the hook. I should be very clear, there is no safe level of exposure to lead. So if they come in at 15 parts per billion, we encourage them to take action to get down to a lower level, hopefully down to a non-detect. If it comes in at 10, it used to be that there was less concern. That's no longer true. We want there to be no detect of lead. And on the public drinking water side of things, there is not a health-based limit for lead. There isn't that kind of water guidance value. But in the Safe Drinking Water Act, there are action level exceedances, and those are really targeted at the community water systems because they're required to take action to make sure their water chemistry doesn't allow lead to leach out of the pipes and into the drinking water. So it's not a level like we have for other contaminants, like arsenic, for example, but it's looking at the health, if you will, of the drinking water system and making sure they're making every effort to make sure that lead doesn't leach out of the drinking water. So thank you for your question.
Thank you. Representative Ackland, any follow-up? So
I do thank you for that because that did clarify for me where we're at with this. And just one more little brief question is, so many chemicals can ingested lead. I understand the significance of that. Can lead be absorbed through the skin? Like we're talking like in the shower and bathing and stuff. Does anyone have an answer to that?
Ms. Eschenauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. And you're correct. And it's very important to look at how the particular contaminant enters the body. And so we are concerned about whether or not a contaminant in drinking water could be inhaled. There are contaminants like that, trichloroethylene. But in this case, the main route of exposure to the body is through drinking water, is in ingestion, so drinking the water. But in Minnesota, as throughout the nation, the highest way of kids are exposed to lead continues to be through inhalation of dust from lead paint in older homes. So that is the highest exposure that we have in the state. We've been very effective in addressing that, but it remains the highest level of concern.
Thank you, Ms. Eschenauer. A follow-up, Representative Ackland?
Thank you for your answers. Very, very helpful.
Sure. Thank you. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair, for your indulgence, and thanks for the testimony. Yeah, I would just say to the author, Representative Akam, that since this is a one-time appropriation, and it's a pilot program, I would just really like to see every effort made to look at the LCCR funding or the legacy. I mean, it's over $1 billion there rather than started out of the general fund. And that is an overriding concern of mine. But I know we all want clean water, and there is a heightened awareness out there. My daughter won't drink coffee in a coffee maker that if it's made out of tap water, she wants it out of bottled spring water. So, I mean, I know there's a desire to see the clean water, and I think the turnout is an example. But again, I would just really encourage Representative Akam to look at the LCCR or the legacy versus directly out of the general fund. Thank you, Ms. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. I don't see any additional, I'm sorry, Representative Heintzman just raised his hand. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question for Mr. Broberg. Has this proposal, if I recall correctly, it has in one shape or form or another already been proposed to the LCCMR, am I remembering correctly?
Mr. Broberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Heintzman. No, we never made a formal proposal. We pivoted to gaining the partners to do the planning that we were thinking about, and we took the COVID year to do that. So we were going to submit a plan to do all these planning and get some money to put all that together. We just gutted it up and did that. So we're in a pretty good place to move this forward to implementation now. And you know, the of course, it's a valuable source of funding, but a long process and kind of a crapshoot in the end with them receiving 300 proposals every year and having to go through such a long process. And we know there's a specific need for this. So it might be viewed favorably there, but we need to move this forward to be a permanent part of Minnesota's care for their water.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was just a yes or no question, Mr. Broberg. I was just looking to see if it had gone to the LCCMR, because, of course, this process may or not be successful. So it's something that we should obviously be looking at. It is a high priority, should be a high priority, and I hope that organizations don't just skip those kinds of opportunities going forward, because it does matter, and we don't know what's going to happen this session. So that was my only point. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Heintzman. Now seeing no further member discussion, any closing remarks for Representative Akam?
Thank you for the discussion and the questions today to everybody. I appreciate it. And with that, Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 3006 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Thank you, Representative Akam. Representative Akam renews her motion. With that, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Freiberg.
Yes.
Freiberg, aye. Vice Chair Bierman.
Aye.
Bierman, aye. Representative Grunhagen.
No.
Grunhagen, nay. Representative Akam.
Akam, aye.
Akam, aye. Representative Abaje.
Aye.
Abaje, aye. Representative Ackland.
Ackland, aye.
Ackland, aye. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Franzen.
Franzen, aye.
Franzen, aye. Representative Heintzman.
Aye.
Heintzman, aye. Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Representative Pryor.
Pryor, aye.
Pryor, aye. Chair, you have 10 ayes and 1 nay.
Okay, there being 10 ayes and 1 nay, the bill is on its way. Thank you for presenting both bills, Representative Akam, and thank you to all of the testifiers for being here. That concludes our agenda for the day, so it looks like you'll get about 17 minutes back in your day. So seeing no additional questions or hands raised, we are adjourned.